Welcome to the Dirty Heifers Podcast, soap making, small business, and so much more. Let's get dirty. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Dirty Heifers Podcast. If you've ever considered selling your products at a craft fair, you know it's not as simple as showing up with a table and some soap. Craft fairs can be a huge opportunity for revenue, brand awareness, and community building, if you choose the right ones and go in prepared. Today we're talking about everything you need to know before you pack up your car and head to an event, from how to set up your booth to dealing with, let's say, less than friendly shoppers. But let's start here. Jesse, what was your very first craft fair like?
My very first craft fair was it was very janky and thrown together.
But were you prepared, or was it like a total disaster?
No, I was prepared. I mean, I've always been one that tries to be prepared for things. I may fly by the seat of my pants on a lot of things, but if it's something that I can actively prepare for, I'm absolutely 100% prepared. But it was, I got the invite before I'd adopted the Country Lather name. A friend of mine, actually the same friend that helped me set up my website, she was on like the board of directors of this nonprofit, and she contacted me. She said, "Hey, have you ever considered setting up at an event?" I'm like, "No, not really. It's not my kind of thing." And she said, "Well, we would love to have you at this event." I'm like, "Okay." I'm like, "Well, let me think about it." And I thought about it, and I had a pile of soap already accumulated. You know, and I thought about it, and I ran some numbers, how much I thought I would need. And I said, I got enough time to make it and have enough product to take. And it was, you know, it was pretty decent as far as, it was a very small craft fair to start with. And I did okay. You know, it got my feet in the water. I didn't start off at like this big craft event. It was very small. There might have been 20, 25 vendors at it. It was very small, but I mean, I still made $200 profit my first event. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
You know, I had to borrow a tent. You know, when you start off with craft fairs, you don't have to start off with all this equipment. It's like when you start your business, you start off small and you build on it. The first tent I ever used, I borrowed from my dad, and, you know, I borrowed the tables. So the only product or the only stuff that I brought that was actually mine was, you know, my soap, and which was actually cool. My mom actually came in and halfsies the event with me. She quilts and sews and such, and she had a bunch of just different things that she brought and she sold as well. So she's a regular. She typically comes with me to most of my events.
So I take it that event was, because I'm just thinking some of the events that I have been to, or at least one of the events that I go to, the biggest one that I go to a year, you have to let them know in advance what types of products that you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And anything not on that list, they will give you a problem about when you get there.
Well, this was a really small event. They were just tickled to have vendors.
Okay.
You know, so.
So that's one of the things that I was going to talk about is, So for my first event that I ever went on, somebody asked us to go to an event, and we were like, we had no idea. How much stuff do we bring? I don't know. Google's, you know, they're like, you know, bring as much as you can. You can't sell it if it's not there, right? So you bring everything. Right. We brought everything that we owned to this event.
I did too. Everything.
Everything we owned to this event, and there were maybe, you know, a couple hundred people there. So we were bringing, you know, hundreds of bars of soap, not realizing there's a couple hundred people there. But then we also go to an event where there's over 50,000 people there, right? So that's the one big one that we do every year is the Argyle Fair, right? So you got to research the place that you're going to. So had I known that this place typically gets between, you know, 250 and 500 people, I would not have, first of all, I probably wouldn't have gone, right? Because it's a lot, you know, there's a lot in going into it. But if I had gone, I certainly wouldn't have brought anywhere near the amount of material. I brought the same amount of material to the event where there were, 300 people as I do to the event when there are 50,000 people.
Right.
It took hours to load and unload the car. And I think we were the only people there that made money that day. I think the buy-in for that event was like $20. Right. So we made money, from some, a lot of the people that were there, but not worth the amount of packing up and unpacking that we did.
Yeah.
Now, so I am someone, who does not do markets yet. I haven't done any legit markets yet. The only one I've done was like some event that someone I work with invited me to at his place a couple times. What would be, when someone is starting out and looking into markets for the first time, what are some things you recommend they look for and some things that are red flags to you?
My big red flag is anytime there is a free event. Now, there actually is a free event that's close to me that I have, but it's 5 minutes from me. It's not like I'm packing up and driving, an hour. Mm-hmm. It's 5 minutes from me, and it's a free event. And, I typically do okay, but the past couple of times I've not went because I've just gotten to where I'm like, it's hot, and it's always right around the time I've got another event that's bigger. And I've come to realize I can spend my time better preparing for the big event rather than packing up and, doing like two in a row. But typically the free events are not good events. But if you're just wanting to wet your feet into events and you're brand new to your craft, I would encourage you to do every free event you could, because for the practice, there's an art to packing up.
Mm-hmm.
I can pack up and go to a fair now. From packing my totes to putting it in the car, I can be ready to go in an hour and a half. Just, I'm used to it. I've got into a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So just solely based on that, I would recommend doing every free event you can. Plus, you're trying to get your name out there. If you don't do anything but hand out business cards and just show off your product,
mm-hmm.
you're connecting with your community. And, there's a lot of people out there that don't have social media, like the older generations. Not all of them do social media.
Right.
And that's the thing, is meeting people in your community. It's anytime you're a business, you're integrated within your community. And that's a great way to get out and meet the people in your community and show them, this is what I do.
Right. Right. Well, a craft fair is kind of like a social media page. I mean, exactly. You said the old people don't have those social media pages, but this is exactly what it is. So like your booth setup is like your homepage, and the signage that you have is your bio, right?
Right.
And your interaction with the people is your engagement. So how you present yourself matters, right?
It does matter.
So what you were saying, you were asking about red flags. One of the things that I did, I don't know if you've done it, is there are a bunch of local Facebook groups for craft fairs and vendors for craft fairs. I don't know if you guys have that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, don't do those.
Well, the Facebook groups?
The local Facebook groups say, oh, we've got this event going on, we got this event going on. I have never been to one of those events that was successful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's kind of a red flag. Like, what I do look for in there is if somebody approaches me about a fair, I'll look on there and see, I'll do the search terms and then see how their past events went. And when, if you see people complaining like, hey, I'm a soap maker and there were 17 other soap makers at this event. Like, mm-hmm. if the people aren't, like, soap making itself is not a saturated market. There's not a saturated market, right. But mm-hmm. if you have that many soap makers at an event, then it's a saturated market. Nobody wants to, you know, I'm not going to buy from every single soap maker there.
Well, right. That too, and you've got a lot of these kind of like hobby soap makers that, you know, they don't have a website and they don't do anything like that, but they will do the craft fairs.
Right.
You know, so it might be somebody that you don't know that is, you know, it's not a local business, it's a soap making business, but, you know, Mary Ann down the road has been making soap off and on for 20 years, but she only does these little markets.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So.
But that's one place to look. Well, you can look to find out when fairs are, and you can also, you know,
and the cool read the thing, comments. The cool thing about doing those free events is you talk to the other vendors.
I was going to mention
you can
that.
You can look at the other vendors, and you can tell who does this stuff on a regular basis. Like mm-hmm. the folks that rolls up with trailers
yes.
and such as that. You're like, they do this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I like to, my neighbors that are at these craft events, the, you know, the 10 on your right, the 10 on your left. I always, always make them come pick out a bar of soap.
Really?
Yep.
But I've done trades for at trade shows, at craft shows.
I always do little trade-offs, but my neighbors, they always get a bar of soap because a lot of times, you know, Mama will, she'll pop, like she, for one craft fair every year she comes with me. My really big one, she comes with me. But like some of these other ones that I do, I may not have anybody with me. And you develop a relationship with your neighbors, you know, and nature calls, you got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Hey, will you wash my booth? Well, you just gave him a bar of soap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've never done a show alone. It's always me and John, or me right. and John, and one or both of the two kids. Mm-hmm. I say both of the kids, but there's never been, you know, Emily's never been to a craft share with us. She was already out of the house when we started this, the business.
So, fees I've read can run the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you two give some comments on that?
Well, you know, you've got several different types of events. Mm-hmm. You've got regular, like, craft fair type markets or street fair type markets. And with those, you know, the fees can run, I would say, stay away from anything that's below $75. Because every one of them that I've done that's been below that has been it's not pushed at all. It's not, yes. They didn't market the market.
Yes, that's, you know? That's the thing. It's not your promoted. Fees are paying for marketing. Mm-hmm. Like the promoter is actually supposed to promote. And like Jesse said, anything that we've done that was less than $75, I agree. That's a good price point. Just wasn't marketed, and that's when you're going to get, you know, 200-300 people there. And, you know, 200-300 people getting eyes on your products, that's a nice thing, but not for $75. Because you're, nice. You know, you want to make back, I don't know what, when we first started out, I would do all this, you know, Googling and asking questions and looking at Facebook and like how much you should be making from a market. And everyone said tenfold. So whatever you put into it, you should come back with 10 times what you put into it. Is that always the case? No.
No, and like, when you start out, you're not going to do that. Well.
Right.
I mean,
I don't really think tenfold. I think, you know,
I mean, now it's more like I do that.
Six or sevenfold.
You know, I would say at the bare minimum, you know, whatever your buy-in is, you triple that.
Yes, I agree. Triple. Maybe quadruple, that's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, if you're just starting out.
But if we don't make 10 times, then John's like, this wasn't worth it. We're not doing this one again.
Stay your butt at home.
Yeah.
that's how I would be anyhow. But, I mean, I typically now I do tenfold just about at every market. Now, I've done a few trade shows, and right now I'm 0-2 on trade okay. shows.
And but trade shows are much more expensive.
They are much more expensive. You're looking at, on a cheap side, $500.
Real quick, explain what a trade show is versus a market.
Okay. So a regular, what we've been talking about, market, that's like a street fair or a craft fair. you know, one of those types of deals. A trade show is where it is for businesses only. Like, you're there marketing to other businesses. So it's like you would call it a wholesale market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's called that as well. And, you know, those fees can go into the thousands of dollars, depending mm-hmm. on where it is, you know, the size of the crowd, who's mm-hmm. putting it on, you know.
We were approached to do the the trade show, the white label trade show at the Javits Center the year that I met Joanna at the Javits Center at that same trade show. And I was like, I am not ready for trade show, whatever. But that buy-in was, the smaller ones were $2,000.
Yeah. There's one in Dallas, I believe, that's really big. Like, you've got one in Dallas. You've got one you've got several in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas is that's the big one.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a really big one in Atlanta. I think the one in Dallas, like, the buy-in is like $5,000. That's a lot of money. That's
a lot of money.
Country Lather ain't ready for that one.
No.
Well, also that you're looking at, like, huge wholesale accounts there, too, so you have to be ready to scale up fast.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, right now, I did a trade show in Jackson a couple of summers ago, and, I mean, I broke even as far as my booth fee, but Jackson's so far away. It's just far away enough that you'd have to get a hotel room. It's like 2.5 hours away. So, you know, after hotel room and food and gas, yeah, I was upside down in it.
Are you allowed to sell stuff at trade shows?
Every one of them that I've been to, it's mm-hmm. called no cash, no carry, which means they can order product and, you know, they can write you a check, they can PayPal you or whatever, but they can't carry it with them. There's other ways around that. But, you know, like, they can't take the product with them and carry it out of the show. You know, it's like an order basis type deal.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's nothing against, like, you know, you've got your vehicle at your hotel room. They come meet you in the conference room later and uh-huh. pick up their product. There's, you know, they ordered their product just as long as they don't carry it from that show. It's how it runs in the state of Mississippi. I don't know about other places, but
I wouldn't know. I've never done the trade show thing.
Yeah.
But back at the craft shows, like, one of the things that you were saying before about getting to know your community, being at a craft show is kind of like, you know, it teaches you who your buyers are, right? What sells well, what do people hesitate on? Use the analytics that are right in front of you. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Instead of using your analytics on your laptop that you sometimes don't get to ask the people why they didn't do stuff. You might, you know, if you see somebody pick something up and they look like they're interested in it and you put it down, you might just say, hey, what, you know, why would you put that down? Let me ask you, what's preventing you from buying that right now? And they might mm-hmm. say, hey, it's priced too much.
Yep.
And that's something that you need to get a gauge on. And
that's
you can do it right there with the people right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And another cool thing, like, with me that I've run into in the past couple of years is when I go to these craft fairs, a lot of times there's other vendors there that are soap makers. They'll end up in my booth and they'll pick my brain on stuff. So
okay.
it's a thing of, there's two sides of the community. It's dealing with your customers. And you could help other, you know, you could be a help to other business owners. It's all about craft fairs, in my opinion. I could go to a craft fair and just break even, and I would be tickled. Because you get to shake hands with your people in your community. You get to make contacts. You get to network, like Shauna said.
Mm-hmm. Definitely networking. And you can, you know, you could do... not product testing, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to be there and test, but you can certainly ask people, like, you know, their preferences and what kind of products they'd like to see. Or if you're selling something that's not soap, like, hey, what do you think of this? What would be something that you would do to improve this? Or, you know, getting a lot of, you could pick people's brains.
Exactly. Exactly.
So yeah, I've said I have not done any actual legit markets, and part of it is time. I just work a lot of hours and have weird hours, as you guys know. And then, you know, there is some investment. Like, if I'm going to do it, I want to have like the table and the displays and everything, which over the years, some things have built up. But for me personally, I just know that like the local, we have an Apple Fest every year here. And then there's like a bigger Apple Fest nearby. That's something in Pennsylvania. That's a big thing. But like people I've bought from before who are soap makers now make my own soap. I don't buy from them anymore, but they are at these markets. And like in my own head, I'm thinking, oh, I don't want to intrude on that. And I think that's something maybe I need to get over.
Yep, you got to get over that.
Yeah, you really do.
Absolutely.
And I can guarantee you I'm not the only one thinking like that. Like, oh, they already have so many, you know?
Right. So one of the other things about being at a craft fair is like your branding, right? So you don't just want to show up with a table and just throw stuff out there, right? You were saying that you're building up your display stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of the craft fairs out that are here that are you okay over there?
She just disappeared. Dropping crap. I was getting the display.
Oh, I see. Yes, your lip balm display, right?
No, that's not. It's a...
Your bomb display.
Roll-on fragrances. You don't even know what the heck I have going on here.
No, I knew you had something.
I thought you passed out or something. Shauna had too much to drink. There she went.
Too much sweet tea? Yeah, there we go.
But, I mean, your branding can be on everything. From what you just showed with the tray to, I mean, every place that we go to outside, you need to have a tent. So you can have your brand on your tent. You can have your brand on your sides of your tent. You can have the tables with the tablecloths that have your logo on them. You can get a sign up for the back. You need to have signage as well. One of the things that people say all the time is they can't stand walking into a craft booth. And as a customer, I don't want to talk to the people. I don't.
Imagine that.
Right? I know. It's hard to fathom this, but I am an introvert and I never want to talk to people. I want to go in. First of all, I can't stand shopping. So if I'm out shopping, then there's something up, right? But if I'm in a craft booth and I'm looking at something that I like and I can't see a price, sometimes I'll just walk away. If there's no price listed, I have no idea. Is it $10? Is it $100? I have no idea. I'm leaving, right? So it would have good signage. Make your prices visible so that someone like me is going to see the price and, you know, not have to ask a question. But on the flip side, when I'm behind the counter, you got to talk to people. You got to, you know, welcome them into your booth. Say hello. Don't just be standing there on your cell phone. You know, there's nothing worse. I don't want to talk to you as a customer, but I don't want to see you sitting there on your phone and ignoring me either. I want you to want me to talk to you,
right?
Even though I don't want to talk to you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Now, see, I kind of disagree with the prices being marked. See, I purposefully don't price my stuff. I don't list prices at all. Because, like you said, when that customer walks in the booth, I start a conversation. Y'all know me. I talk to a fence post to carry on a conversation.
Yes, you could.
So, you know, I'm
you would scare Margaret off if she didn't know.
I would. I'd have scared the crap out of her son. I'd be like, hey, honey, you could come here. Let's talk. Where you from? We'd find Ken before we was done. But yeah, I'm talking with my customers. I'm like, oh, these are the specials. We're in always run at least one package deal, like a sweetheart deal.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I mean, my soaps, they retail for $8 a bar. When I do craft fairs, I always drop them to $7 a bar because then I can say, if you buy today, you get a better price than if you go to my website.
Okay.
Plus, I will do a package deal, and it's typically like a 5-bar pack, like 5 bars for $32 or something like that. That way, they feel like they're getting an even better deal, and they got to buy that day.
Right.
That's my reason behind
that. You're creating a sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Fear of missing out.
Got to create that sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if if you're like me, you've got little accessories like the soap dishes or the Sisal soap saver bags. You know, if you buy 5 bars of soap or you buy 2 bars of soap, I'm going to throw a soap saver bag in. You know, just something to drive sales where you make that customer feel special and important.
Mm-hmm.
Quick question. Uh-huh. Whose phone's going crazy?
I don't know. Not mine. It's got to be Jesse.
It's not mine. I don't think.
Are you sure?
I don't know.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Vibrate?
Oh, I had an order come in.
Yeah, I keep hearing vibrating.
Yes, the vibrating. That's what I
Yeah, and July is texting me like 7 times.
That's what it is. Your table transmits sound.
There. Yeah. I put it down yonder. And my battery's at... ...18%.
And mine... Is it 99 up. And it's plugged in still?
66.
So, all right. So we talked about signage, your the pricing thing. So that's one thing, not pricing and then running deals. But then also, I know that you said you have your you can pack up in an hour. You can get there. You can set up really quickly. One of the things that we struggle with a lot is trying to figure out what our display is going to look like. And depending on if you have a corner booth or if you're in the middle or if you have, you know, back and the front is open, you know, where are you going to put your tables? How many tables are you going to have? I highly recommend setting up and practicing before doing your first show. Lay out all of your products on the table, see how it looks, arrange them so that they look visually appealing to you. Because if it doesn't look visually appealing to you, it's probably going to have people, they're going to walk right by.
Right.
Right.
Add height to the table.
I was just fixing to say that. I have 2 shelving units that collapse down.
Mm-hmm.
And they're cute. They're a farmhouse design. I got them at Hobby Lobby for way too much, anyhow. But I take those and I'll set them up. And typically I'll make these, they don't sell. But I'll make up these bath buckets. I don't know why they never sell. They're cute. They're adorable. They're a package deal. But they don't sell. Very seldom do I sell a bath bucket at a craft fair. But it's a prop. It's up there. It's pretty. These old ladies is going to come in and they're going to look. They're going to fix my bow because I suck at bows. Typically my mom will come in and she'll fix the bows and, you know, transport them. They're going to get mushed and messed up and I could care less. If that little old lady wants to walk by and come fix my bow, go right ahead. Come in and buy bar soap while you're here. But that's what they'll do. It's eye level. They're going to come look at it.
Right.
And then while they're there looking at it, I'm going to draw them in by asking them questions and talking to them.
Well, yeah. So not only having things at eye level, but all different heights, right? One of the people, when I first was looking into doing a crafts hair, they were like, you know, your typical table is very low. And then people are hunched over and they don't really want to hunch and shop. So he actually suggested getting, you know, that you've got your folding tables with the legs that go kind of like that. He suggested, and we did this, is you get PVC pipe. That's, I don't know, a two inch wide PVC pipe and cut them at lengths like 10 inches long, even, and then slide them onto the bottom of your table when you set your table up. And now you've got a higher table and it's different than all the other people and people aren't hunching, you know, all the other booths. It makes you stand out a little bit. The only thing that isn't good for is when you have your custom tablecloth that wraps under. So we used that for the first few shows, and now with the custom tablecloth, I mean, could I still use it? Yes, but it would look weird. You'd see the PVC.
It'd be like you pulling its dress up.
Yeah. So then you can't see, like, because the tablecloths are really good as well, because then you hide all your product underneath.
Right.
And it's not messing up your entire booth.
Well, if you get, like, I'll be honest with you, I've got a few of those that's, like they're the buffet style where they'll tuck underneath your legs and they're fitted to conform to the table, fitted to the table, whatever, squirrel. 9 times out of 10, I use bed sheets from Walmart. I'll go buy like a twin size set of bed sheets.
Mm-hmm.
They're cheap. A lot of times, if you can catch them on sale for $5, put a couple in your buggy. Those make great tablecloths. They're long.
Yeah. Well, mine has my logo on the front.
Well, I tell you the hack I've got for that. I've got a table runner that's got mm-hmm. my logo on it. So whatever I use, I can put that table runner there, and it's got my logo on it.
Yeah.
So it just drapes over the front? Your runner just drapes over the front of your table?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So we're talking about displays, and of course you can go anywhere from super cheap with your displays. Like, you can just buy some plain wooden crates and stack them up and attach them to each other so they don't fall down.
Done that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you can get it creative with it, and a good place to look for ideas like that is Etsy. Yeah. So I just showed you the I had this made on Etsy, and actually it wasn't super expensive, and they laser engraved my logo in it. But this is not for market. This was for a store display, but I got this box made, and he put the logo on it too. So people make their own. They have all kinds of market displays and collapsible shelves, like you said, that could take down and look really cute, and you can mm-hmm. get colors and everything. But if you're artsy fartsy and crafty, like somebody in this group who can make anything that she wants out of anything she wants. I'm not a woman.
Taint me.
Did you just say taint?
Quit hearing things, heifer. But yes, I did say taint.
Quit hearing things, but yes, you really did hear that. Etsy's a great place to get ideas, you know, asking groups, people all the time. I see in some of our groups on Facebook, people are like, hey, I got my first market coming up. This is my, you know, this is how I think I'm going to set up my table. What do you think? You know?
Yeah. Post the pictures. Yeah. Ask questions, because people will give you a lot. You'll ask a question. You might get 500 different opinions.
Right.
But they'll give you ideas.
Or you can ask them to share their display options. And, you know, people use like mm-hmm. little fruit baskets. You know, some people come up with some very creative things.
Like a hanging fruit basket would be really cool for your bath bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have not a hanging fruit basket, but it's like this. I got it at Hobby Lobby. It's this tower and it has three baskets, and that's what I used for my bath.
Cupcake towers would be good. Cupcake, you know, they have towers. Those tiered mm-hmm. cupcake towers you can do. I would mm-hmm. say, you know, if you live in a place that has a few thrift stores, just go thrifting and see what you find, because you never know what's going to...
Yeah.
Desi's face. Look at her. We know
I hate thrifting. Oh.
I really don't like it either, because I grew up doing it, but...
Yeah, me too.
I'm traumatized by it.
But I don't know if there was this type of store up there, but growing up, there was like an outlet type store called Movie Star. And it was all over the place down here.
Yeah, never heard of it.
And, oh my gosh. I'm convinced I hate shopping now, because I was drugged through so many Hudson's, Dirt Cheap's, all the stores.
Topic. Have you guys noticed outlet stores are not the way they were when we were growing up?
The outlet stores out here, Tanger yeah. outlets, are just as expensive as the regular
exactly.
store.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, when I grew up, an outlet store was like, you know, the
you get it for half price.
One-offs. Yeah, the cheap stuff that, like, you know, there was like some little weird
defect or a crooked logo or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not now.
And now it's all like the same stuff. Like, what's mm-hmm. the point?
Exactly.
They just
it's just call, an out.
They call it an outlet. Mall. They call it but an outlet just to draw you in, thinking you're gonna get a better price.
But you know, it's a mall. It's just
It's a stove.
Toe.
It's right. a stove.
Is the stove spelled STORE?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Out here we have the Tanger Outlets. There's
Tanger Outlets, yes.
Tanger Outlets, right? But there, it's just an outdoor mall.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
We've got those around. The big thing we've got down here is called. I don't even know what it's called now. It's down in Gulfport. It's an outlet mall. And
you don't know what it's called because you avoid it.
Yeah. I mean, I've legit been there like three times my entire life. But you got a Levi outlet. I think they, when I was in high school, they had a Banana Republic outlet, you know, Gap outlet that had all that. But
hey, you guys remember the brand of jeans called Chick?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to go to the Chick outlet all the time because that was about the only place I could find talls at the time.
and Jordache.
Mm-hmm.
Jordache. That was a big thing.
All right. We've gone off topic.
Yes, we got off topic. All right.
Squirrel.
So, what do you bring chairs with you, Jesse, or you stand the whole time you're there?
No, I bring chairs.
Chairs?
I've actually got one outside because I went and got my chair after I sent that text message. I've got two of the collapsible, like, I call them camping sack chairs, you know.
Little ones. Dawn and I have, like, the big director's chairs. So, and they're up there, like, really hot. You have to get up.
Because y'all are fancy.
Now, when we thought we were going to be doing more market-type stuff, we got some... The folding camp chairs, but they're the bigger ones, so they're sit a little taller than your typical camp chair.
I need to. I've been saying for like as long as I've been doing markets that I need to like go to Academy or something and actually invest in a good collapsible camp chair, but I have yet to do it.
So looking at our list here, how do you deal with trolls? But what's some of the rudest stuff that has happened to you at some of these fairs?
Had much negative interaction. One person did steal a shampoo bar, and I know who it was. I can picture it right now. She distracted me by asking me a question, and then I looked for something, and I turned around, and she was still there, and then like when she left, that Purple Haze shampoo bar that was right next to her was gone. But that's about the only, I haven't had a lot of negative things, except, you know, some people will come in and be like, oh, this is expensive.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Then I use Irish Spring. Well, good for you. Go buy some.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. You're a bleep.
Yeah. I don't get a lot.
Who goes to a soap maker's booth and says, oh, I use Irish Spring and this is crap.
Yeah.
You're a butthole.
I get a lot of people will pick up, I'll have this because it's wrapped, but they'll pick up an open bar of soap, you know, with nothing
on it. And put it to their nose. They're like,
who wants to, like, full on, like, cry? You could see
nose molesting the soap.
Nose molesting.
Nasal molestation. I made up a new term.
Okay.
I'm proud of myself. Nasal molestation.
Yowza. That's your new Southernism? That's
and then it's really bad if their nose is running faster than they lick it off.
Oh, stop it. Oh my gosh.
You knew I'd sneak it in.
I knew you would. So, I was wondering if you could get them. Like, it's cold out, of course. It's cold.
No, it's warm outside right now.
Well, I forget that you're not there. It's like 25 degrees here. It's so cold.
Ladies, it is still the beginning of February, and the pine trees are already putting on blooms. There's a film of yellow on my Black Explorer already.
But Punxsutawney Phil said that we had 6 more weeks of winter, so...
Hey... Hey, listen, we're drunk.
There was a nice film of white when I came out of work today on my car.
Yeah, there's going to be a film of white tomorrow when you go out too.
Yay.
Let's.
So I've read some interesting interactions. People have had customers come in and just be so completely rude or argue with them about ingredients, which I find fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had that.
I've heard soap makers come up and ask other soap makers or other people selling soap questions about their soap and find out. They didn't even actually make it because they know nothing about it, which is interesting.
I'm not rude about it, but when you go to other markets, don't you always check out the other soap makers?
Always.
And there's only been 2 or 3 instances here at markets where I'm like, these people don't make this soap.
Yeah,
they have no idea.
They
what
know nothing about it.
Nothing about
they're
it.
They're trying to answer that.
I haven't run into that in the market scenario, But a couple of weeks, no, about a month ago, I think I sent y'all screenshots. I run across a live on TikTok, and I'm not going to name the company, but it's like the guy who runs the lives, he's like the marketing guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's on there, he's live selling soap on his TikTok, on the TikTok shop for this company, and he knows nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I jumped on my burner account. Because I didn't want to be on there with, like, Country Leather Soapworks.
Right.
I jumped on my burner account, and I'm like, oh, you know, nice to meet another, you know, soap maker, yada, 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 you know, just conversation. He had zero clue. None. Like, oh, yeah, these are made with great ingredients, because it's got coconut oil and,
yeah,
you know, reading from the back of the bar.
The other funny thing that I've read multiple times, and I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but multiple people talk about someone walks up to their booth, picks up a bar of soap, and then takes a bite out of it. Mm. They don't seem to understand that it's not food.
I haven't had that in person, but I did make years ago. First of all, I read when we were first starting making soap, like if nobody's taken a bite out of your soap, then you're not a real soap maker. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. That's just weird. And I made this soap that was, it looked like little bunny rabbits. And I made soap in a cupcake mold. And then I piped on some grass and I put on real jelly beans. And then I put the little rabbit on top of it, right? And I put them in a little baggie, whatever. Somebody from my job bought it. And she said, she came in the next weekend. And she said she gave them out to people at a party. And her sister-in-law thought it was chocolate and took a big bite out of the bunny. And she said she immediately spit it out because it's soap. And I said, oh, I'm a real soap maker now.
I don't know that I've ever seen anybody try to take a bite out of my soap, but when I first started making soap, I don't know how many people said, oh, I thought that was fudge.
Okay.
So many people say it looked like fudge. Jesse's amazing now.
Can you imagine taking a bite out of your soap? They come up, they grab that bar soap, they go. Just nasal molest the soap and then give it a little love bite.
A little love bite. Okay.
Happen to you now next market.
Yeah.
Someone can do it.
Well, all I got to say is I live in Mississippi and it's open carry state, so go ahead.
Dude, you're not gonna do that over a bar of soap. Oh my gosh.
Gonna be weird up in my booth.
That might be a little extreme.
It's like you need that wasp spray you're talking about. All right, you need to leave now, or I'm going to spray you.
Get a spray. Yeah, some folks spray their cats. Get out of here.
With a water bottle, yeah. How about, you're saying water bottle, but I've seen people with, talk about displays. We were talking about displays before, but I've seen soap makers that go so far as to get, like, sinks.
Yeah.
Portable sinks that people mm-hmm. can actually use the product right there and then. Do you have a lot of, because when I make body butters, if it was an indoor market, because most of the markets are in the heat and you can't really sell body butter in the heat, but if it's an indoor market, you know, you have that opportunity, and I would bring like little samples with little teeny tiny spoons and people would use that stuff. But other than that, there's really not much that you could sample for soap.
Right.
That very first market I was telling y'all about that I was vendor at, there was actually one other soap vendor there. And all she made was Castile soap, like, and she was new to soap making. And I knew that Castile soap had to cure for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, said, you know, how long do you cure your soap? She said, oh, you know, 6 weeks. I'm sitting there going. And I bought a bar. I traded her a bar. I'm like, here, let's swap, you know. And legit, that bar soap was gone in 2 days.
Mm.
And her pricing system was weird. I don't know why. How did I get on this?
We were talking about testing.
We were talking about displays and testing.
Oh, yeah. She had one of those little hand washy things.
Yeah.
She had like one of the, you know, the big, it's like a jug. It's got a spout on the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. She had one of them with a bucket at the bottom to catch the water. I don't see how good that would work. Because, I mean, you're going to be hauling water back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, these portable sinks.
Think about the heavy.
These portable sinks, they have like a collection thing in the bottom. So you fill it up in the bottom. I don't know if it just drains on the ground when you're done with it or what, but
But that's going to create a muddy mess though.
Well, depending on where your show is, yeah.
Yeah.
I live in South Mississippi.
Yeah.
Should make a muddy mess.
Like some of our things are out on grass and fields, and some of them are like in the road, you know, they shut down.
Yeah,
you could be on the street and stuff like that. How about do you do bags? Do you bring bags with? That's something that you have to think about. You know, how are people going to walk away with your product?
Yep, I keep bags.
Mm-hmm. I keep paper bags, and I go to Restaurant Depot and I get like some plastic bags as well for people who get a lot more. But the paper bags I stamp with my logo.
With your logo, yeah,
right, obviously.
Now I have the couple of wholesale markets that I've done. I've made up these little small, like the small brown paper bags, and I'll stamp my logo on the outside of them, and I'll put like a soap sample and some literature on the inside of them, and I'll hand those out. But like the regular open air type markets, I've got like 3 boxes of the plastic bags. They're different types of bags because there was a soap maker locally that went out of business here a couple years ago, and I just kind of, she messaged me, she said, hey, if you'll take all this stuff, $300. And it was a lot of stuff. I'm like,
I remember that.
Deal. Hmm. You know, I wrote her a check. And so I've still got like 3 boxes of bags up there.
Nice.
You know.
So. And what about, how do you collect payment? Is it cash only or do you?
I do, I've got a POS system. That, you know, if they do
POS,
credit cards.
Tell people what POS is.
Sorry. Point of, not piece of.
Yes, that's why.
Point of sale, not the other.
Not
get your mind
piece
out
of
together.
Snot. We just got to make sure they know we're on the same page.
But,
that's the PG version of it.
I've got a point of sale system, and I also deal with cash. And And that's another thing you've got to worry about. A lot of these markets, you know, majority of it's cash.
Mm-hmm.
So what I typically do is I typically will do like $100 of ones. I'll do $100 of fives. I'll do 200 of tens, 300 of twenties. And that's what, you know, that 'cause I've been to some fairs and a lot of times banks down here are closed on Saturdays. Like, mm-hmm. They roll up to sidewalks. So I've got to make sure I've got enough, especially if it's a multi-day event.
That took you a minute, didn't it? They roll up the sidewalks.
They roll up sidewalks.
Yeah. I don't bring that much, typically. I do about 100 to 150 in singles, and then I usually do about 100 in fives. I don't even think of bringing 10s and 20s. But for me, we do typically about half cash and then half either Venmo or PayPal or we'll swipe a card.
Yeah, I'll do PayPal as well, but I mean, maybe on the high side, a quarter of my sales will be through a credit card. The rest of it, down here in the South, cash is still king.
Yeah, nobody carries cash here anymore.
Yeah, especially the older generation.
But it's something that you have to prepare for. So you have to think before you go. You have to be prepared for both, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't have a point of sale system or if you don't have some kind of way to take money digitally, you're missing out. And if you don't have, if you run out of singles and you run out of, you know, change to give people, you're missing out because,
exactly.
You know, I'm not going to let you keep the change.
Right.
And I don't know how they run up there, but I know down here, the organizations that put on the craft fairs down here, those organizations have to collect sales tax from every vendor.
No, not really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you have to, some fairs will ensure that you have a tax ID, but most don't. And it's your job to collect your taxes. But how about this? What do you keep your money? I keep my stuff in a fanny pack on me. Some people do a cash drawer. I've seen people do a cash drawer, and then I've seen videos of people walking away with somebody's cash drawer.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, it's on me.
What I do is, you know, y'all have seen me, ladies. Everywhere I go as far as business, that book bag is on my back.
Right.
So typically that book bag is within arm's reach, and it's got my bank bag in it. But in my pocket, I've got a super high-tech, super fancy gold-leaf engraved money clip. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I've got a alligator clip, one of the big ones. Okay?
And I'll, you mean like your hair alligator clip?
Hang on.
Yeah, I think she's talking about a binder clip.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think that's what she meant.
Probably. That makes more sense.
Yeah, I was going to say you have to think about tax too. Like, so you need to have coinage as well if you're going to cash.
Well, Liam.
Yeah, well, not really. Yeah, that's what she said.
Yeah. And that I'll fold my money up in that and I'll put it in my pocket. Yeah. And I'll have an assortment. But that money bag never leaves my sight.
Yeah. No, I don't even take it off. Mine, it's wrapped around my waist at all times. And I'm the only one that holds the cash. So if John is helping someone, he will hand the money to me to get, you know, tell me how much, you know, what
he
needs.
Jesse, you should wear those overalls next time and use that pocket right there.
You're right.
Pocket.
You're right. Now, what if it's been a super duper busy fair and it's what I consider a sketchy place? Now, the bank bag, you know how your pants seam right there will bulge out if you bend over. I'll stick it right inside my pants right there and put my shirt over top of it.
So even being concealed carry? I mean, yeah, even being open carry?
Well, open carry, you can carry it on your hip.
Right, I know. So you're open carrying and you still have to hide it?
No, I think she said she sticks her cash bag back there, didn't you say?
Yeah, my
cash bag. What I'm saying is people are going to try and steal your cash when you're carrying it on your hip?
Nobody's going to steal it.
I was going to say, you can walk around with it hanging on your pinky.
Look, you can.
No?
Nobody's going to steal your stuff down here because Paw over there and Uncle Joe over there and Granny back yonder, they've all got something on them.
So let me, here's something that I found to be absolutely mind-blowing. And I don't know if Shauna is aware of this because this was a conversation that Jesse and I had maybe a couple years ago, right? We were talking and I was saying something about setting up for the craft fair, and the big show that I do, it starts at 9 o'clock, but you have to be set up by, I think, 7, and they let you start setting up at like 5 a.m., right? Mm-hmm. And so Jesse was like, what'd you talk about? You don't just put your stuff there the night before? night before? I was like, what? She said that down there, they can go set up their entire craft show the night before and go home. And when she comes back the next day, it's still there.
You're not going to do that in New York. No.
No. I was like, wait, what? No.
Yep. Absolutely.
I think, no.
Well, then I went to the Tennessee Farmers Market, right? The Nashville Farmers Market. And when you go there, what?
The one downtown?
The one downtown, Nashville Farmer Market, this is what sparked the conversation. I was like explaining to her that there were several vendors, because those vendors are like pretty much permanent, right? They're there and it's all the time. I mean, they rotate, but there are people there that like, they're not even there for days and days. They only come on the weekends, but all their merchandise is there all week long. And there's hundreds of people just walking by and I'm sure stuff gets stolen. It has to because it's just so many people, but to leave it out in the open, all your products, I just, it blew my mind.
That's having lived in Nashville, I guarantee you stuff walks. But if they have a situation like Jesse was talking about where, you know, you're friends with the other vendors there, some of them are probably keeping an eye out for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, like where I live, the fairs that I do, I vet them pretty hard. And two, especially the ones that I will set up the day before and leave, they've got security that works there. Like my big one, the Gingham Tree that I do every year, second Saturday of November, every year in Lucedale, Mississippi. I'll go set up. Now, I won't like completely set up. I'll set my tent up. I'll get it anchored. I put everything under the tent and I'll drop it down as low as it'll go. You know, in case it gets windy or rainy.
Uh-huh.
And the next day, me and Rachel and Mama will get there. Now, me and Rachel will get there at about 7 o'clock in the morning. Mama comes waltzing in about 10:30.
But does she have coffee?
No, because I've already drank like 3 cups. Y'all know me. But me and Ray will get there and we'll get everything set up. And everything is still there. I know the majority of the guys that work security at night, they're all off-duty sheriff's deputies.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to come mess with that.
Right.
You know.
Well, you were saying you put your tent down mm-hmm. in case it rains or gets windy. So that's one of the things. If you're in an open air market, you got to prepare for any kind of weather. Uh-huh. So if you're going to get a tent and you're thinking that the weather might not be so wonderful, you have to make a decision. Either am I not showing up for this? Right. So if it's raining, I mean, if our
product, and a lot of times they're non-refundable too.
Right. They're non-refundable. So if I paid $200 to be in a show, I'm going to make every effort that I can to be at that show. But if it's raining and my wet label, this is paper. If it gets wet, mm-hmm. it's, that's it, you know?
Yeah.
So you gotta, I get the, my tent has the 3 sides that go with it that you can put up to prevent yeah. if it's drizzling or something like that. Yeah. So far, knock on wood, we haven't had any rainy markets. Yeah.
Now, what's weird down here, like during the summer, you're fine to put all 4 walls of your tent up if it looks like it's going to rain. I set my tent up with the walls on it one time at the Ginkgo Tree, which is like a fallish type of the year. And the temperature dropped drastically this one night. Like, it went from, it was 80 degrees the day before, it went down to 20 that night. It got cold. And we got to the Ginkgo Tree the next day to set up. The inside, my whole tent condensated.
Hmm.
And
that's not good for soap.
Yeah. Which everything wasn't set up. Everything was still under the tables.
Thankfully.
And the totes. But me and Rachel, we spent like 20 minutes just tapping the sides of the tent and tapping the roof of the tent. We got poured on mm-hmm. and it was cold.
Oh, mm-hmm. no.
But just trying to get the water off so that right. we could set up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That sucked.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
Bad.
And the last one that we went to was, you got to be prepared for the heat.
Uh-huh.
We bring wind. A cooler with us, the wind. And we set up this last time and it was on a field and there was so much dirt and people walking by and the dust that kicked up and got all over everything. Every one of our products, like our candles, they look like this normally. It had like, you could just go like this and there was just fingerprints and it was just so nasty.
Okay, so I got a question.
All right.
Okay. All of us have made bath bombs. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Outdoor markets with bath uh-huh. bombs.
I know what you're going to say.
What do you do? What do you ladies do?
Okay.
To prevent them from getting bleached by yeah. the sun?
So I had no idea that the sun can take the color out of your bath bombs.
Uh-huh.
And the first one I put, you know, right there up on display, and it was so nice. And by the end of the day, I was like, what happened to my bath bombs?
It was like white.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so now I keep them in the shade. Yeah, you gotta keep your bath bombs.
When I did bath bombs, I would I'd wrap them in tissue paper, and then I'd put them in my little treat bags with my tag. And mm-hmm. that kept them from getting bleached. But, man, they were a pain in the butt to package. And a pain in the yeah. butt to make. I'm glad I don't make them anymore.
Well, the problem with that also, though, if you wrap them up like that, then people don't see the colors. And then that's yeah. what attracts people to the bath bombs.
Well, that's yeah. the same thing with this, though. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm wrapping it up like that, people can't see the colors. So what we do for craft shows is whatever I bring with me, whatever bars we bring, we unwrap one. And I leave one as a display so that people can see the colors.
So that they can nose molest them.
They can nose molest them. You can do whatever you want with those. And then those go into one big 2-gallon bag. Actually, sometimes I use the same one from the year before. It won't smell as strong, but it'll still be visual. But yeah, so.
Yeah, one of the people that I bought from a lot, she only displayed the naked bars. And then when you went to buy them, they would go under the table and get the boxed ones out.
Yeah.
The naked bars?
Yeah, naked bars.
That's what it is. Unwrapped.
Naked.
They're naked.
And they had the shelves all set
up. And then they get nose molested.
They had the shelves set up with like the name of the bar underneath it. So then you knew what it was called. You could just pick them up and smell.
But it's so much nicer because if I just put them all out like this, people just walk right by like, what is that? But because we make so many that are visually appealing, so that's part of your display, is think about how are people going to see your product when you have it there, all the different ways that you can set up. What about, let's see, we talked about that. I do keep lists printed out on the list.
I have it on my iPad in front of me.
Yeah, right in front of you. How do you decide how much inventory to bring?
I typically bring the same amount of inventory for every fair. Now, there's a event I'm considering being a vendor at this year. It's a humongous event. It's down in Ocean Springs. It's called the Peter Anderson Festival. It's the type of event where it's going to cost you $500 to get a booth, and it's just a regular open-air market. Now, for that one, I will probably... And it's like a 2 or 3 day event. So it'd be the type of thing where I can restock when I go home. But typically for something like that, when you're talking, you know, 20,000 plus people, I would highly, highly, highly recommend bringing at least 40 bars of each. You know, taking at least 5,000, probably close to $10,000 worth of merchandise. Because you could prospectively sell all of it.
In something that big. So what if you were going to a market that, say, cost $75 to get in? What would you bring for that?
I typically bring about $2,000 worth of product with me.
Okay.
Which my average is like, I'll take like 15 bars of each types of soap, you know, plus accessories. I'll have bundles and such as that. So, you know, I would say $2,000 worth of merchandise is safe.
Okay.
You know, a good minimum.
Well, that's one thing that we always argue about, John and I, you know, what we're bringing and what he doesn't want to bring it because then he doesn't want to bring it back. And my thing is I would rather bring it there and bring some of it back than bring not enough there and then have to either run home to get more or something like that. So.
And see, that's the thing with me. The closest good market that I go to is 25 minutes from me. I'm not just going to run home and go get product.
See, the funny thing is 25 minutes is nothing for me. Like, I'm thinking 25 minutes, that's running home. You know, I would run home for 25 minutes. If it was an hour, maybe I'd be like, oh, that's far.
Yeah. Like, going from the gingham tree 45 minutes, no, I'm not running home. You know, I'd rather take too much and bring some back than be like, crap, I could have made way more because I didn't bring enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one other thing that I don't think we mentioned before was, because we did talk about how the price that you're paying to get into a craft fair is supposed to be used for marketing that craft fair, but there is nothing stopping you from marketing yourself.
Exactly.
Get on Facebook and say, I'm going to be at this fair on this day. I hope to see you there. Get on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, everywhere that you can, shout it out. Tell everyone, you know, hey, are you going to this market? We're going to be there. Take a look out for us. You know, that, and that is, you know, if you're company is not doing the marketing, you know, you can at least bring some people in.
I've seen some people who, you know, they do dozens of markets per year. You know, they'll do, they have lists of like 20 of them they do every year. And that this is like their circuit that they do every year. And they list every single one, what date it's going to be and where it is. So like they have just a whole list. This is where you can find me this year. So you don't have to do each individual one. If you're doing several markets, you know, list every single market you're already signed up for somewhere on your website.
That is a great idea. That is a good idea.
One other thing we need to discuss. The difference between a regular market and a juried market.
I've never heard of a juried market.
What really?
Yeah.
So that's why we're here. We're here to learn.
Okay. A juried market is where you put in your application. A lot of times you have to submit photos of your display. You have to submit photos of your product. And it goes before a board. And they decide whether or not they will let you.
Mm-hmm. And then the that's what I do.
Yeah, that's a juried market.
I didn't know what that was. That's what I do. That's what I, that's the big one that I go to.
Yeah.
But they are also, everything has to be handmade. Right. So I have a friend who I went to high school with, and she owns a clothing company. And she actually was the one who like said, you know, you really should be in markets. And she goes to all these different markets, and she can't be in that market because she doesn't make the clothing that she sells. And everything at the market that I go to has to
be handmade.
Handcrafted.
Yeah.
So there's no like, you know.
That's how the gingham tree is. If you don't make it, you can't bring it.
Right. If you don't make it. And then, and that they even asked for like my website and proof that I made it. Right. So I'm like, you can go on my TikTok. You can see me making all my, all my stuff. It's me. It's my face. That's me.
Yeah. That's a juried market. This big one I'm wanting to do down in Ocean Springs, it's a juried market. I've got to get my stuff together and take pictures. Good grief at the notifications. Now, the other markets I do, like the Gingham Tree and the Pine Hill Festival and such as that, you pay your fee, you fill out your form, you sign your waiver, you're in. You know. But I've done a couple of juried markets. Those are typically always really good markets.
I was about to ask, that it seems like since they're vetting people, it
yeah, would be a better market. Yeah, I didn't know that that was what they called it. But yeah, and we have to fill out our applications, I think in March. The application window opens in March, and then it closes as soon as they hit a certain number of applications. And then you get, like, I got waitlisted 1 year, and I didn't get into the market because I waited, I forgot until April to fill out the application. And then you don't even find out if you've been accepted until, like, June.
And when is the market?
It's in, it's right before, it's in September, early September.
I think we've talked about starting up doing some markets, but we've also talked about whether or not we want a retail store. You know, it's, there's different ways of doing things. But if I do some of the markets, I think there's a few big things around, big events around here that I would like to get in. Go big or go home for me.
That's it. That's why I said, I'm like, let's go. You know, we did a handful of small markets, and then we got into this one, and I don't know that the small markets are... I don't want to say that it's worth it. It's got to be worth it because in addition to you know, if this was my only business, you know, if I didn't have a full-time job all week long and like, you know, my weekends are my weekends for when I'm making the stuff and doing all that, you know, it's not, it's got to be worth it for me to spend that much preparation.
So I think, you know, small markets are a good way to start.
Yes.
They are. But it's a good way to get some experience.
Right. And if you're still small and like just kind of hobby making, that's probably a good way. But if you're like full on business like us, you probably want to go for the bigger one.
And also, it's a great opportunity. I don't think we talked about this, was to get emails. I don't know if you guys are collecting emails yet, but I was told very early on, start collecting emails.
That's a good idea.
I had at my first market, a notebook, with, I printed out pre-printed like email, you know, put your email here, your like the forms to fill out, name, name, email, and I think phone number maybe or whatever it was. I don't know. And then, you know, left a couple of pens there, and then I offered a discount. If you, you know, you give me your email, I'll give you 10% off, blah, blah, blah,
incentivize,
whatever, something like that. And, that really helps you later on when you're doing your email and even in your email marketing campaigns. Like, hey, if you're going to be in the area, I'm going to be at this market.
Exactly.
You know,
I was going to say that earlier,
which is kind of, it's weird because I also collect emails on my website. So I have a couple thousand emails, and they're not all local. So I don't know that I would send that out for an email? You could probably segment your audience into local population.
You can, if you understand how to do it. The other thing, you know, I brought up Etsy earlier. Another thing you can do is if you know how to find the QR code to take you to the website.
Yes.
You can have a sign made. People laser engrave a little QR code sign. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you could just say, hey, go here, sign up for the email, show me that you did.
You can make those on Canva.
Yeah. But, you make it, make a little sign so they can just scan and sign up if you don't want to have to put it in later and try and read someone's handwriting.
That's a great idea. I'm going to put that down in my notebook of things that you've given me ideas for. I wrote down juried market, and I'm wondering if there's a way that you could specifically search for juried markets, because they really... I didn't even know that was what I was doing, but they really seem to be of a higher quality. Uh-huh. So I would look for those.
And you know, you said you incentivize it if people sign up for the newsletter then, but you know, most of us, whenever someone signs up for a newsletter, they get a coupon code too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be like, hey, you get 2 discounts if you sign up today.
Yeah, that's true.
You get a discount now.
Double dip.
You get that later.
Get that double dipping.
Incentivizing. Something Jesse said earlier made me think. Probably the first and best thing you can do before you join any market is make sure you know your craft.
Oh, yes. Because you don't want to be selling anything before you don't know your craft. If you don't know what you're doing.
She had this other maker that was selling this Castile soap that wasn't properly cured. Who's going to come back and buy that again later?
Yeah. People that we have diehard fans that won't shop on the website. They eat no matter, even though they know they love our stuff and they know that we're local, they uh-huh. only buy local. They know we're local. I'm like, dude, I live right in the same town as you. And they're like, no, they'll buy $150 worth of soap.
And then the market.
Just so that it'll last them till the next year when I'm going to be there again. I'm like, you could buy it in smaller quantities. Nope.
I've been guilty of that myself.
Yes.
I have been.
I've got 2 or 3 customers that will go to the Gingham Tree every year. And they will legit buy $150 worth of soap.
Nice.
Like, they bring their own box.
Well, that's dedicated.
They're prepping. You gotta be there. Dedicated. I'm coming. I'm bringing my box.
Yeah.
That is dedicated. So, I guess we have determined, right, that craft fairs are a great way to get your brand out there, get your increase your revenue, building your community, things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Gaining awareness.
Yep. A great way to get in touch with your community and let them know what you do. And, you know, it's all about networking. I have learned it's all any business. Networking is a fantastic tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that any listeners we may have that don't actually have a business that they're possibly applying to markets to now have a better understanding of what goes in to the markets whenever, you know, they go there. It's not just, you know, make your stuff and show up. There's so much more that goes into it.
There's a lot that goes into it.
Just like our business. That's why a lot of us show behind the scenes all the stuff we're doing, because people just don't understand how much there really is in running a business. And we're only showing a fraction of it, right?
You wear many hats when you run a business. Oh my Lord.
It was like that trend a couple years ago on TikTok where they were talking about, like, let's meet the staff, and it was the same person for every single thing.
The marketer, the promoter,
the marketing,
production, shipping, packaging. Yes.
Yeah.
It was to the family.
Everywhere you go, the Full House thing.
Yeah, Full House. That's what it was. Yeah. I couldn't remember what the name of the show was.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. You did a really good one of those, didn't you? Shauna, I don't remember seeing one.
I didn't do one.
I didn't do one.
You didn't do one?
I think so.
I think when that was going on, I still wasn't showing my face yet.
Because you're a weirdo.
Wow. That goes without saying. And yet, who are my friends?
Craft fairs can be an absolute game changer, but they can also be exhausting and unpredictable. The key is preparation. Knowing what to bring, how to set up, and how to make the most of your time there. Whether you're in soap, candles, woodworking, or any other craft, these events are all about connections and experience. So tell us, what's your biggest craft fair win or horror story? Drop a comment and send us a message. And don't forget to follow the Dirty Heifers on YouTube and your other favorite podcast platforms. Until next time, keep crafting, keep selling, and stay dirty, heifers.